issue. Accession number 30641, Mr. John Lindsay, Reel 3. Now, you went to Tatura in May, late May 1941, and it's there that, you know, you get the inspection visit from Major Layton, it was. I'm looking.
You were sent from England.
Yes, I'm now looking at some of your memoirs, yeah. You know, to help. Now, you say the conditions were a little better.
In
what way? Was it just the weather? Or
I think primarily the weather, yes. No sandstorms. And not quite as hot. They were near as hot, in fact.
Now, what's the next thing you remember of the procedure of volunteering? You'd volunteered.
I volunteered for the army. In those days, you had to volunteer for the Pioneer Corps because that was the only thing foreigners allegedly were allowed to join.
So you volunteered. Was there any sort of inspection or not inspection,
no.
But any tests or anything?
None whatsoever, no.
So what happened then?
Then we were given dates and they kept on being postponed because they hadn't got any transport. And eventually, I think we went to another camp in between the holding camp and then went to Sydney to board, I think it was Sydney, to board the ceramic, SS ceramic. The White Star boat, which was there were about 40 or 50 refugees on board, internees on board, and the rest were Australian air crew who were going to England for war effort.
Now, you seem to have set off in August.
In August? No, it must have been later.
Oh, no, sorry, yeah, you're messing about at that camp. Sorry, yes, yeah. I see what you mean. Yes,
you must have left in October, I think.
It's October, yes. That's quite right. What do you remember of conditions aboard this ship as a ceramic?
Oh, they were extremely good. We were treated just like the Australians, and we were treated very well. In fact, we took turns with the Australians to do watches, 2 hours on, 4 hours off. And were treated extremely well, but it was a very slow, very old boat, very long, and rather exposed to U-boat attack. And but we went over to New Zealand. We weren't allowed ashore, the Australians were, but we were treated very well apart from that. And then from there we went on to the Panama Canal, went through the canal, and when we came out the other end, we were to join a convoy, and we did join a convoy, who escorted us for a while, but we were too slow for the convoy, so we were left behind. And en route to Halifax in Canada, the Pearl Harbor happened, which we were told about, which of course cheered us up in a way, because the Americans were shortly to join the war. We got to Halifax, where it was absolutely, it was December by, early December by then. Everything was frozen, icicles hanging on the ship, and it was pretty miserable, but it was beautiful. And again, I'd joined a convoy and left behind and made our own way back to Liverpool. But on board, we were treated perfectly well. We had good food and warm accommodation. We had cabins and most of the people who came back to England with me were of like mind. They were all younger people who'd, most of them, been to English schools. Some had been to good English public schools. One had been to Halebury and a few others. And it was rather a jolly journey, apart from the fact, of course, we were very exposed in this very old boat, which, in fact, got sunk about 6 months later. And
When you got to Liverpool, that's, December... late December.
Yes, just before Christmas. Must have been about the 20th or so.
Now, what happened when he got there? You seem to have signed on formally at Huyton again.
Yes. And then we were given a railway pass to wherever we wanted to go for Christmas. And I went to stay with Reverend Cotton, who by then lived in Pang. No, where did he live? No, I think he must have still lived in North Allerton, and where my sister was, eldest sister Eva was living. And spent Christmas with them and then reported to the Pioneer Corps in Ilfracombe, which was a sort of recruiting basic training centre.
Now, so you joined there in January?
January, yes.
Now, What do you remember of what happened at Ilfracombe? I mean, it was a depot, wasn't it?
It was a depot. We were kitted out with everything except arms and ammunition.
Do you remember what you got?
Well, I got my unit uniform and cap and kit bag and wash things and boots and great coat and an insignia of the Pioneer Corps. And that was about it.
Now, did they start training in any way, even just down to drill or anything like that?
I'll tell you more, and I cannot remember exactly where we started. No, I don't think we stayed in Ilfracombe long. We were shipped.
So it's essentially you just remember.
It was just a kitting out centre, and we were sworn in, of course, although we were sworn in Heighton, I suppose. And we were posted to a Pioneer Corps. I had the great misfortune of being posted to 229 Company Pioneer Corps, which consisted only of Austrians.
Where were they when you joined them? It looks like Ogbourne Maisie, which is near
Marlborough. Near Marlborough, yes.
And
we were accommodated in stables, and I slept in a very in a stable which was previously occupied by a very famous racehorse. Everybody impressed me. It's still there. I went there not so long ago.
So what were the stables like?
Well, that's like stables, and we had bunks and palliasses. Back to palliasses again.
Palliasses.
And it was pretty rough, but it wasn't bad.
Now tell me about the Austrians. How did you fit in?
We didn't. There were about 12 or 15 of us who were all people who'd stuck together in Australia and on the boat and in the Pioneer. We had no choice where we went, of course, and they regarded us with suspicion. But they were mostly, in our eyes, elderly, but I suppose they were in their 30s and 40s. And they weren't particularly keen on doing anything, but they all had to work, of course, and train a bit.
Now, what exactly were you doing at Ogbourne Maisie? What was the role that they had this one on?
We were building roads between coming out of Swindon to the American army camps, roads which were to be used by heavy American tanks. So we started the roads from scratch, first digging it out all by hand, there had no machinery, and then getting huge rocks and filling them in with smaller rocks, and then concreting over.
So it had to be a very sound foundation.
They're probably about that deep, yes. Probably 2 feet, 18 inches deep. And I think it'll probably last forever. And that was very hard work, because the rocks had to be broken up with sledgehammers, and we didn't have any eye protection or anything like that. But of course we had fatigues. We didn't have wear our uniform for that. We had fatigues to do that in. And by the time we got back to the camp in the evening, there wasn't any training or anything. I don't remember doing any drill.
It sounds pretty exhausting.
I mean, it was very exhausting, right? Especially for the older. We were youngsters and it didn't matter so much. But it was very, very heavy work.
But it was also winter, because you joined them in what, January?
January, yes.
The back end of January.
Yep.
So you just basically out there for how long? Was it a full 8 hour?
I can't remember, but it was a very full day. I think we had some Saturdays and Sundays off. I don't remember that. I certainly had Sundays off.
Now, anything else about this period?
Well, we were not all that comfortable in the stables, so four friends got together, and we rented a room in an adjoining farm where we spent the evenings playing poker and bridge.
So you still lived in the stables?
In the stables, but we went there in the evenings just to relax and, get a bit of peace and quiet.
And
warmth. We played cards, poker, bridge.
Now, this isn't gambling, though. This is for amusement.
Bridge, six matches for a penny, if we call that gambling. Didn't have the money. The pay was pretty awful, as you know.
It was just to give it a point.
Just to get away from the from the Austrians and from the stables, because they weren't particularly comfortable for the right to sleep there, but there was nothing other than that.
Did you go out to it, sort of to pubs and things like that?
Yes, we went out to pubs. We went to big band concerts in Swindon with Hilton and places like that, and we went into more run part of the pub. That's only 3 miles, 3 or 4 miles away. But we didn't mix with the locals at
now
all.
Why not?
Well, there was no opportunity.
Were they unfriendly, or was it?
No, they weren't unfriendly, but we really had no contact. We did a little drill, but the one I remember most of all when we had to pretend we had a rifle each, and we were given a stick, and we went out in the field, and we shot at people with a rifle. When we stood to attention, that was meant to say that we were firing at somebody, because they had no weapons at all. Because eventually there were, you see, there were a number of pioneer corps companies. One of them was called as one was a Q two or a Q company. Q stood for queer. They were all people who weren't quite right in their minds, and there was lots of rejection. And they were called unarmed, and we were one of those. We were unarmed. I suppose we couldn't be trusted with anything anyway. We were far more useful making roads and things. And then I was very lucky. We had a chap called Bernstein, who was in fact born in England. I don't know why he was interned. And he was a corporal, and we were given the job of building a tin, you know, food cans, press to reduce it, the cans down
now,
to
I think
a small
that's when
size.
Gone to Bulford.
The Bulford, that was
yeah,
in Bulford.
Let's,
yes.
let's hold
it comes
on to
a bit
that
later.
For just a
yeah.
minute.
Now, while in Ogwen Maisie, of course, the possibility of transfers came up, and we were all asked what we wanted to do, and I put my name down for a glider pilot. Tim Blanchard and I went. We then went to Oxford for an interview for 2 days, aptitude tests, and which included cutting the lawn with nail scissors and taking locks to bits and putting them together again, and having musical adaptability tests. But it was a solid 2 days, and both Tim and I were accepted. But for some reason, we were never called. But I got my full army records from the army records office, and it's all documented in there. We were accepted subject to Home Office agreement, and apparently that never came. So I was asked what else I wanted to do. So I said, well, anything other than the infantry, there's too much walking. And I'll go in the tanks. And my friend Tim Blashroeder joined the paratroops.
And you did this while before you'd moved to Bulford?
Yeah.
Not sure.
I think we did all that, but we didn't actually join our training much later. We just went through the motions, yes. And
So the Royal Armoured Corps, you presumably...
I put my name down for, yes, but we didn't know what we were going to get. And then we were told that there was a possibility, of course, we'd see action, so we might be taken prisoners of war, and it would be advisable to change our names. And we had a great fun day with people choosing their English names. Most of them couldn't pronounce their names, of course, and they chose the most peculiar names.
Now, you chose John Lindsay. You
yes.
were Wolfgang Lindemeyer.
Yes, well, I really chose Linton, first of all, because my father wrote under the name of Linden. And I thought that sounded too German, so I made it Linton, but somebody else got there before me. So, in fact, I met this widow not so long ago. And so I opted for Lindsay, which people thought I was Scottish. But it was a fun day, because most of these chaps really couldn't speak English properly, and pronouncing their names.
And why John?
The W, because of the John Wilfred, because of that. I don't know, I just thought
just
that.
Did.
I just did.
And that was in April 1943.
Something like that, yes.
that happened. Now, just going back, what about the news from your parents? Because, I mean, this was great news.
It was filtered through that they'd been deported. That came to us via Switzerland. But what actually happened to them, we had no idea.
And you didn't find out, did it?
Not in real detail, no. No, not till the war was over. 45.
Now, you moved to Bulford.
Yes.
Do you know when that is? It's not in here, so I presume it means you don't remember.
I don't remember. Must have been in 43.
And what was the conditions like?
Again, same sort of barracks, but I think we had proper mattresses and not straw. And Bulford was quite nice because it was a garrison town. We had our own cinema and naffies and things. And I was very fortunate because
Now you started on a sewage farm, which doesn't sound too.
No,
Do you remember that at all?
Oh yes, distinctly. Yes,
we had to dig.
Oh, we had to dig out the muck and clean it all out. But we were relieved of that when we were asked to build this thing.
Now tell us about this thing. We'll get back to that. This is where
it was a sizable steel construction, and it was to house a machine which compressed old tins and food tins and all sorts of things, a salvage operation, in other words. And we had to order the steel and bolt it together, and we had a lovely time. But they all the sort of people with whom I'd been all this time, because they chose us younger ones, and the corporal in charge, who was born in England and didn't know a word of German, so he was quite happy to talk English to us. And that was a fun job. And I suppose after that we were probably asked to report to Farnborough, if I remember rightly.
Now, this is in July 43.
Yes.
When you're going to be transferred to the
Royal
Armoured
Corps. Yes, we went to Farnborough for our training.
Now, is that the depot of the Royal Armoured Corps at the time?
Yes.
One of the depots,
there were several. Yes.
Now, what do you remember of your reception when you arrived at Farnborough? You know, because, you know, you're arriving from a somewhat unusual route for the Royal Armoured, you know.
Yes, but I don't think they... We were just treated normally. We were just given a few, given Blackberry and all the insignias of the RAC, you know, the thing with the fist on it. And we just underwent our normal square bashing. And
now, what was your accommodation like there?
I think it was quite reasonable. I don't really remember the detail, but there was nothing wrong with it. It was again, barracks, I think, and it was just quite respectable. I don't think we stayed, I can't remember, we didn't stay there very long before we were
seemed
posted.
Seemed to have been there about three months,
yes,
4 months.
And then we were posted to
Can we look at the training a bit? How did you take to drill? I mean, you must have done a bit of it, I think, but what did you think of drill as a medium?
All dead stupid. It was supposed to instill discipline and obedience, and we didn't take it very seriously. But we had lots of lessons on operating tanks and Morse. I was destined to become a wireless operator.
Now, take me through the signal training.
Well, there was no signal training. It was just Morse training.
And how did they do that, then?
Well, we were taught Morse in classes, and we had our own little Morse thing, and until we became totally proficient. Never used it during the war, of course. And
what speed did they try and get you
up to? I can't remember now, but I did quite. I've got a little musical head on my shoulders, and I did quite well on that.
A lot of people have said it: music and Morse go together.
Yes.
Is that?
And then language too. I think so. I managed to speak reasonable English, and I think it all connected somehow. But I got quite proficient.
What about wireless? How much wireless work?
Well, operating. We didn't take the thing to bits, but we had all the equipment that was in tanks and in scout cars and armored cars. We got to know all that and the wavelengths and how to tune it in. And
so it's more how to use it than what was going on inside it.
Yes, a little bit inside, but basically how to use it.
What about driving? Did they teach you to drive?
That came rather later. I don't think I drove in Farnborough. I think that was the next stage when we went up to Brandon or whatever it was in Suffolk.
So you certainly didn't learn to drive a tank or anything there?
Not there, no.
Any other, so you at Farnborough, at the moment we've got drill, Morse code and wireless. Anything else you were doing there?
No, I think that was, but you know, Morse code took up quite a lot of time, and I suppose, but we had a lot of square bashing and physical jerks and all that sort of thing.
How did you do with PT?
Yes, we had to do our PT and go for runs and things and get us fit.
Were you fit?
Yes, A1, I think. I think I passed all the necessary requirements. Otherwise, I wouldn't have got into the tanks.
Now, one thing is, it looks like you did your driving training there in this
did
account.
Did I?
Because you seem to go to a cafe a lot.
Yeah, was that from? I can't remember. That was from Farnborough or from Brandon.
It's in this.
It's in Farnborough. Well, we were.
That doesn't mean.
Yes. Well, we had a driving instructor with a 1500 weight truck, and about six of us went out in the morning, and we stopped at the nearest cafe, and after about an hour we went back again. So we didn't get much driving. In fact, I never learned to drive properly in the army at all. Not officially. Not the official training.
You couldn't drive before either.
No.
Now, so then, what next then? You see, at the end of 43, you go to the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars. Are they at Brandon?
They're at Brandon, I think. Yes.
Now, what were you?
They'd come back from Egypt for retraining and re-equipping, and we were sent to make up the numbers because they lost quite a few in the desert.
Now, what state was the unit in as far as you're arriving, it's your first unit?
They regarded us with suspicion, of course, because they realised that some of us couldn't speak English properly. But now,
how did that show itself, the suspicion?
Well, I think we're sort of treated to with some suspicion, I suppose. But it didn't last long. And, of course, we had...
What was the state of the unit? I mean, did they strike you as a competent, well-motivated
I think they were...
Or were they available the weather or what?
Well, I think they'd come from Egypt. They had a very rough time in Egypt. They lost quite a few. And I think they were rather hoping they would stay in England, not realising that they were going to be going to France in due course. And we were totally re-equipped with modern equipment, modern tanks. And
now, what were they equipped with?
Cromwell tanks, Sherman tanks, and Honeys, if that means anything to you.
So they got was one squadron one thing?
No, you had, there was a headquarters squadron, which had mostly Daimler scout cars, which were six forward and six reverse gears and with a swivel suite, but it was supposed to do advanced reconnaissance. It's an armoured car, a Daimler armoured car. That was head office and all the administrative. Then there were three squadrons, and of course this was an Irish regiment, so of course each vehicle had a name named after a racehorse. Mine was called Harkaway. Later on, I was transferred to B Squadron, so we changed it to Barkaway, but that's by the way. And we were introduced to our equipment, so we had rather too many.
Which was yours?
I started in a Daimler, then I went to a Humber scout car, then I went to a Cromwell, and then back to the armoured cars.
So I'm still trying to get a picture of what's what when you first joined them. I mean, you're equipped.
Well, we had to get used to the equipment, and of course we had.
But which squadron had which equipment?
Headquarters had Daimler. The Daimlers only, and of course trucks and things to bring supplies. The other three squadrons all had equal numbers. They had Comets, Shermans, and Honeys, and some Humber scout cars as well. It's much
do
the
mean
same.
Comets, or do you mean Churchills?
No, I don't mean Churchill. So Churchill were much heavier. The guards had Churchills.
So Comets.
No, not
Comet.
No.
That's what I mean.
Cromwell. Cromwell.
Comets a bit later.
No, not Cromwell. Cromwell. And there was a lot of training there, and you know, the servicing.
So you had first.
First, I had a scout car. I had a Daimler scout car first.
Now tell us about that. What was it? What were the roles of the crew? What was it like as a vehicle?
It was a lovely vehicle. It was very low, and I've got a picture of it somewhere. And this one at Bovington in the museum. It's a two-seater, as I say, with a 6-4 and 6 reverse gears and a swivel seat, so when you ran into the enemy, it was quick, because the idea was not to fight. Although you had a Bren gun, the idea was just to reconnoitre and report back on the radio, because I was the wireless operator on this thing, not the commander. And although we were trained to do it in Morse, there was never time to do it. In England, of course, we did it in Morse. And we had to get used to how to repair the
two-man crew.
There was the two-man crew.
So what was your role?
I was a wireless operator and driver. Driver, wireless operator. No, it wasn't the driver, it was just the wireless operator then, yes. So and the driver was the commander as well.
So were you the gunner as well?
Well, we only had a little Bren gun, yes. But never used it.
Had you had any training on the Bren gun?
Oh, yes, we had lots of training. I had to take them to bits and put them together again.
And when was that?
Oh, all the time in Farnborough already and then in Brandon as well.
And what did you think of the Bren gun as a weapon?
Well, I thought it was very light, but it wasn't meant to be anything other than just to scare people away, because the scout guys weren't supposed to fight. They were just to do reconnaissance, and then the heavy boys would come up. We would call them up.
Now, so you were originally in a headquarters company?
Yes.
When did you transfer?
Oh, in action later on.
Oh, much later on. Yes. So you were in your brain, and it was Harkaway, did you say?
Yes.
And that was the name of your thing. Now, who was your other... Do you remember who your driver got?
Yes,
was?
He was a miner called Pick. I forget his first name. He was a sergeant.
A sergeant?
Yes.
Now, what did you think? Sergeant Pick, what did you think of him as a sergeant?
Well, he was a real Welsh miner, and he was a lovely chap. Down to earth, salt of the earth sort of guy. And we got on quite well.
And his role was to drive it and to be in charge?
Yes.
And you were wirelessing and, if necessary, in desperation, using the Bren gun.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of training did you do as either...
We did square bashing, but a lot of our time, certainly by the time early 44 came along, was to waterproof all the equipment.
Now, tell me about that. Because that's quite a process, isn't it?
Oh, it's a terrible job. I mean, with the tanks, if you imagine this is the tank and the exhaust is there, and we had to fit exhausts like that, so that when we drove through the water didn't get into the engine. And every cavity, every opening had to be sealed with Bostik, which is horrible, sticky stuff. And that took weeks and weeks to do. And, of course... We did a bit of driving, but not very much. I never passed the final driving test.
Did you do any sort of exercises in role as reconnaissance? I mean, you know.
Yeah, oh yes, we did.
So what would the exercises be like?
Well, they were mocked up, but that was more later on.
Okay.